This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk, and today we're going to talk to Hannah Lajoury Murray, and her book is called Live to Tell It. It's all about spousal abuse. A very deep and heavy subject. Hello.
Hi, David. How are you this morning?
Hi. I should say the book is from Inkwell Productions, by the way. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you. How are you this morning?
I'm doing pretty good. Reading this book, I have to say, you know, I went through so many emotions reading this book. I mean, this is a very, very heavy book and very, very difficult to read in a certain way because I'm so frustrated about what happened to you.
Well, it is a story of great detail. I did not want to leave anything out, and I wanted to make certain that everybody that reads this book understands what I went through from beginning to end. And it is very inspirational at the end, towards the end. So there is white light after a dark tunnel, and I wanted to stress that very, very carefully in my book, that whomever is going through domestic violence right now, there is hope for them. Just like I had hope, there is hope for them as well. And I'm hoping that this book will get into their hands and give them the courage that they need to escape, to get out of their abusive relationship.
And you didn't feel hope while you were going through this. I mean, all through the book, I feel like you were just despairing time after time after time.
It was difficult. My situation was a very unique one of how I, you know, met this man and how I married him and in our traditions and everything that I was raised with and how I was brought up, a very strict Catholic European family. And there were times, many times, that I thought there's no hope, there's nothing that's out there that's helping me get out of this. And the thing I guess I want to say is the most important thing in my life that helped me get through this was the love of my children. They were the two most inspirational factors that helped me get through this, even at my toughest times, because they were very young at the time, and I know that they needed me. They needed me as much as I needed them.
And I know sometimes in abusive relationships, the children are in danger, too. I remember seeing that movie, The Burning Bed, and I remember seeing him hit the children, too. So you never know what he's going to do, who he's going to attack. I mean, for all you know, he would be as bad to them as he was to you.
Yes, and actually I do describe a certain time where he started threatening them, too, and that was my breaking point. Up until that time, it was always on me. It was never about the kids, the girls. But there was a time that I guess, was the final straw of the threat that he made towards our daughters. And that, I suppose, was my biggest strength to finally do something about it. Now or never, if you will.
And the abuse, I mean, I remember... I mean, I come from parents who, my father abused my mother mentally, and it was never physically. It was always, but the blame thing, it always seems like the abuser is the one blaming the other person. They're always blaming you for what is happening. And were you blaming yourself, too?
Well, at times I thought to myself, what am I doing wrong? What am I not doing that is angering this person? So there are times that women might go through that think that they said something wrong or did something wrong to instigate it, to push the wrong button. But in fact, it's not the victim's fault. It truly isn't, and that's what I wanted to stress to all your readers out there, that it is not the victim's fault and what the perpetrator, what the abuser is doing to you. It is all his fault. You have said nothing wrong. You have done nothing wrong to deserve this horrific abuse.
And the more I was reading the book, I thought Paul had this all planned in advance. He had it all planned out what he was going to do. It seems like everything he knew what he was going to do well in advance of what he did.
Well, he was really tricky with that. I mean, the way he defended himself and how and his excuses and his stories of why he did what he did to me and what the reasoning was, it was never the truth. It was always something else that would protect him and save him from going to prison, try to protect himself and save himself, or trying to put the blame on me. It was me who did something wrong that made him snap. It was me that did something wrong that made him do what he did. It was not him. He was trying to portray himself as the victim.
It seems like he just wanted your money. I mean, he just wanted that money. That was you keep mentioning that money that he wanted, and you never really did find out, or did you find out what he wanted that money for?
No, I never really found out exactly what the money was needed for, but there were speculations, if you will, that when the police searched our home, they found a weighing scale in our basement that had cocaine residue. And one just assumed that he must have been dealing in drugs or taking drugs in order to pay his debt.
You never followed him?
No.
You were a very trusting wife.
Well, it's the way I was brought up, you know, David. I was brought up to listen to the man because the man rules and the wife obeys. And when you're brought up in that kind of a culture and that kind of a community, when your mom did it the same way, your grandmother, hundreds of years of women in generation after generation, you're taught a certain way. You don't follow him. You don't disobey him. You do what you're told. You never deny him. He is the man, and you are the woman.
But you felt the exact opposite. You felt, I can sense in the book that you really wanted to get away from this man. I mean, you were sensing more and more that he was dangerous.
Well, absolutely. And if you remember in the book, without giving it away too much to your readers there, there was a time where, you know, I thought to myself, if I get away, he's gonna follow me.
He's gonna
kill me. And the hardest thing was to go back to him after all that happened, to go back to him, to sacrifice my life in order to protect my family's life.
It's interesting that your mother's reaction to all of this, the fear and the anger that she had and how upset she was. I loved reading about that because it, you know, sometimes the parents are, you know, they don't want to get involved in the marriages, and they, you know, my mom was always like, she never got involved with her kids' marriages. She always made a point of not doing that because, you know, it can cause all kinds of problems. But I mean, I love the fact that your mother was there for you the whole time because that doesn't always happen.
Well, yes, she was, actually, and she is still by my side till this day. What it was is, see, I was the only daughter, and then I had a baby brother at the time. We were 14 years apart. So it's not like they had a lot of kids where they couldn't even keep track of how many kids. They only had two. So my mom did not know of anything until the very end, as you remember reading, and no one knew about this. I had to completely hide it from the police and from the courts and from the prosecutors and from everybody. I had to do what I had to do, and when you read it, you'll understand why, in order to protect myself. But at the very end, when I finally gave in and made my mom swear on my brother's life that she will not say a word to anyone, that's when she was tremendously afraid and scared for me. And that's when she started getting ill, and it started affecting her health as well, because she couldn't go to my father and tell him, but she was also, she felt helpless and useless of how she can protect me when she really couldn't. She was just very, very scared for me and my life.
Well, it's interesting about your father. I mean, I think you're right. I think he probably would have killed your husband had he known what was going on.
Without a doubt. In our custom, in our tradition, it's blood for blood.
I mean, it's very hard for me not to think to myself, what traditions? I mean, how can somebody tell you who to marry? And you're 16 years old, you don't know nobody knows what's going on at 16 years old. I mean, everything about it just seemed wrong, and yet I understand your traditions. I mean, everybody, these cultures have different traditions, but it's hard not to say, well, that makes me so angry, because who can tell you who to marry, you know? You know what I'm saying?
Well, no, absolutely, and this is why I do not force those traditions on my daughters today. They're afraid to meet the men that they're supposed to meet and learn their lessons and find their celebrations and find the man that they fall in love with and be happy with them, with their choices. But back then, even though it sounds like it's 100 years ago, it was only 27 or 8 years ago that I did marry this man. And that's just how it was, David. You would not, you know, fight it. You were raised a certain way, and to me, it's fine. I mean, I didn't feel like I was being brainwashed or controlled in any way. This is my family. This is how my mom did it, my grandmother, so on and so forth, and this is our tradition, and this is how it's done. You're just raised a certain way where you don't think it's bad or wrong. It's just different.
Now, you were born where?
I was born in Yugoslavia.
Now, is it still like that today? Are there still arranged marriages like that today?
No, I think there's very, very few out there. There might still be a very, very, very small percentage, but no. Today, the today's generation, they do meet the boy and they do go on dates and do all that. I was not allowed to do that.
You mean to tell me, even in your marriage, when he wanted sex, you would just give in every time?
Yes.
Wow.
Never denied him.
It's so, you know, and I can hear all the women out there screaming, you know, what, you idiot, why would you do that? But, I mean, that's the way you were brought up. That people have to understand that's what you were used to. I mean, we get used to what we see, and you saw it in your family, and, you know, and...
I knew no different. I never went on a date. I didn't start wearing makeup, and there was very little makeup until I was 16. He came to ask for my hand in marriage around 16. I married at 17. Even at that time when we were engaged, I never was 1 minute alone with him. My family was always around us. It was just very strict, and I know people listen to this and go, that's so Neanderthal. How is that possible? Well, it is. It's very old-fashioned, and back in the day, that's how they always did it. It was always, you know, someone referring somebody else to you and, you know, a friend of a family, a neighbor. That's how it's been always back in the day, and that's the tradition that my family, you know, continued here in the States, here in America, when they came out here.
And his family, I mean, all through the book you mentioned how his family, it was very mysterious how his family didn't really take to you, and some of them didn't even like you.
Uh-huh.
And I think to myself, wouldn't that be some kind of indication that something's wrong somewhere, that I don't know, but I mean, maybe it's not always that way, but I mean...
Well, yeah, you know, what's not to like with a 17-year-old child?
Mm-hmm.
What did she do to anyone in his family that would make them not like you?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You're very quiet. You don't speak out unless you're asked to speak. You know, it was his family was very, very strange, and some of his family members really did not care for me.
Well, what did that feel like before you got married? Didn't you?
No, I didn't know that before I got married.
Oh, you didn't know?
I was not with the family. They came to visit once in a while, and they showed love and they showed excitement that, you know, their brother and their son is engaged to me. But I was not. I never spent time with his family prior to our marriage. It was after the marriage that I noticed the hatred and the jealousy and how they were very different and very distant from us, from me especially.
And they knew what he was like. I mean, did you think they knew he was going to abuse you?
Well, his father abused his mother, and some of his sisters were abused from their husband. So one would think that, yeah.
But you didn't know that before you got married either.
Oh, heavens, no. I knew nothing of him. I knew nothing of him.
I mean,
I just knew that he was a nice-looking young man, and he had a nice job, and he was always very polite and kind and patient and soft-spoken. And
at least at first, anyway.
Yeah, at first, of course.
Everything. I mean, he and his family had you fooled. I mean, they all had you fooled.
Yes. They had the entire family fooled.
And that's one lesson to learn from what you went through. The women out there today, find out as much as you can about your, if you're going to get married to somebody, find out everything you can about them.
Well, my rule I give to my daughters, because when my daughters were starting to date, is spend at least 4 seasons with a man, at least 4 seasons before committing to anything.
Well,
that's when you see the different changes in his personality and in his ways. So at least 4 seasons, get to know him, and then gradually, you know, decide how you want to handle this. If this is a man for you, if you want to pursue this and get to know him a little longer, or just call it quits.
The really telling scene, and I don't want to say too much about what happened, but in the hospital after you were shot, what his family said to you, and I mean, what you said to his family, is really what got to me more than anything. I mean, I people that haven't read the book, I'd rather them read it themselves, because it's very powerful, and yet I wanted to cheer after I read that. You know, it was such a wonderful, wonderful thing. But I wonder, and I thought to myself later, what in the world gave her the strength to do something like that?
The Lord above. The Lord above got me through all that. Until this day, he walks with me. That's my only explanation. My love for God and my faith and my belief in our Lord. It was his mother that you're referring to that came to my hospital bed, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. The strength, just, you know, my angels, I guess, just took over my tongue and just said those words to her where I basically, you know, said to her, oh, as far as I'm concerned, he did kill me. It's just the Lord above saved my life.
Did you feel, I mean, you, when you first, what was your first impression of Paul when you met him?
Well, like I said, when he first came to my home to ask for my hand in marriage, I mean, I was bringing out appetizers and cocktails and such to the table, and he was looking at me and watching my every move, and he seemed very sweet. He seemed like a nice
guy. You didn't get any bad feelings at all?
No.
Nothing?
No. How can you really look at someone that is just really going overboard and being so kind and sweet and gentle, and you're 16 years old?
Yeah.
How can you really analyze it?
I guess your intuitive sense isn't really developed at 16 too much.
No.
And I mean, look at all these 16-year-olds. They date men that their parents don't like, and the more their parents say no, the more they want to date them. You know, there's that rebellious, like, I'm going to do my own thing. I'm going to do it.
Uh-huh.
But you didn't feel that way. You wanted to please your parents.
I just, not even pleasing my parents, is just doing tradition, doing with what tradition always...
But that pleased them at the same time, though, didn't it?
Oh, well, yes, I guess I could have if I had the strength.
Yeah, but you were more into the tradition. You really wanted to keep the traditions going.
I did, and I was the only daughter in this family, and I wanted to make them proud and do what, you know, it's always been done in our family. I mean, I did not want to be the one to retaliate and be the one that disagrees with this and does not want to do something, you know, to please my family. Absolutely not.
I think getting shot. Now, what did it feel like to get shot? I mean, what exactly is that feeling?
Well, you know, if I had a dime for every person that asked me that, I'd be very rich right now.
Well, what is it? What's the first sensation that you feel when the bullet's going through you?
Well, the bullet went through my chest, and it actually punctured, went right through my right lung. It was just a hair away from my heart.
So you had trouble breathing.
And, well, what I felt is like someone cut me from my neck down to my stomach, and I was breathing through my chest. I had no use of my nose and my mouth. The air was flowing through my chest because of the punctured lung. So I was feeling air coming and going through my chest and not through my nose or my mouth.
And nobody really believed that he did it accidentally. I mean, did anybody ever really buy that?
No, the way, especially the officers and the prosecution and the courts never believed it. But because I did not have, I did not testify against him.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, because I didn't testify against him, without putting too much out in, you know, of the book, they had no star witness.
Mm-hmm.
They had no one to back their story up to persecute him and to prosecute him. So because they had no witness, they only had their evaluations and their predictions to it, they could not do anything, so the case was dismissed.
Did you ever consider committing suicide?
No.
Never? Because of
no.
your children?
Never.
What,
never
if you hadn't had children, do you think you would have?
No, because of my strong Catholic background.
Oh,
you
good
just,
for you.
You don't, yeah, no, never.
But you had to feel that terrible despair. Like, what do I do? How do I live? How do I live every day? How do I wake up? I don't know what he's going to do to me.
David, when I returned back to him after that shooting, I had to always be a step ahead of him. I had to fall asleep after he fell asleep and wake up before he woke up so as to secure myself and waking up every morning. I always was on my toes, always was on my guard, because I did not want to die, and I did not want to die that way by him taking my life. So I never felt like, oh, just kill me now, I want to go. No, I was always very strong-minded and strong in my heart and strong in my religious background that, no, that is not my way out.
And look how much stronger you are today because of all this. I mean, you can live through this. I mean, you're a living example of you can get through this. And all these women out there and women listening now who are going through it, thinking, well, it's easy for her to say, but it's not easy to do. And, you know, what do you say to those women?
Oh, goodness. I was abused in the worst possible way that a woman can be abused. I was shot in the chest in cold blood, and I was left for dead. I mean, without dying, that is the absolute worst abuse a woman can get through, and I got through it.
Now, how do women get through that fear of being left, of being alone, of not having, money to support them, of living, you know, they've got to get away, and what are they going to do? I mean, how do you get through that fear?
You have faith, and you have belief in God that he will prevail, and he will get you through this. There are so many facilities out there, so many different people that you can call for help, but they have to have, David, that strength within themselves to walk out and keep walking. They have to have that strength. Without that strength within themselves, they have to have that dire need to want to do something like this, because I can walk over to them and pull them by the hand and walk them out, but they have to be strong enough to keep walking. Most women go back. They go back and forth, back and forth. And it takes them several different times to go back and forth until they finally, God willing, walk out alive on their own two feet and stay away.
Yeah.
Stay away.
But it is hard. I mean, we're not denying that it's a very difficult thing to do. I mean,
it certainly is. It's the most difficult thing you have to do is you have to save your life. If he hits you once, chances are he'll hit you again.
Do you still have emotional scars about all this? I mean, is it still, you still wake up some days and remember the fear?
Well, you know, David, this happened to me about 21 years ago. And it was a good 15 years after this happened, and everything was settled, and he was found guilty and such, that I finally decided that I wanted to write a book. I wanted to write a book, and when I started writing this book, it took me about 4.5 years to put it together, and it was very emotional during the time that I was writing this book, because it was bringing back all these emotions and the crying and the hurt and the pain and the anger and the anguish. I mean, the emotions are a roller coaster. Every emotion in the book, you feel like a whirlwind. But this was also therapeutic for me to write this book, because my first intentions were to have it written for my daughters, for my grandchildren, and for my great-grandchildren to come, so they know what kind of woman I was, what I sacrificed, what I did to give them the freedom that they have today, that they don't have to have arranged marriages and have me choose their spouses for them and whatnot. But as I was writing this book during that 4.5 year period, then I thought to myself even more, this is going to help women throughout the world find the strength and the courage within themselves to pull themselves out.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So this book was very therapeutic for me. But today, I've learned to forgive him. I do forgive him. You don't forget, David, but you forgive, and you forgive for yourself.
Well, how do you get rid of that anger? Do you decide one day that I'm not going to be angry anymore? I mean, you've got to still have some kind of anger there, or maybe you don't.
Time. It's time. With time, everything. You remember things, but you learn, and you tell yourself that you're not going to let that get in the way of your life, of your future. Mm-hmm. Because the more you have anger on something like that, the more he is still controlling you, and you let it go.
Do you still have the scar where he shot you? I mean, is it still there?
Absolutely. It is still there, and it will always be there for as long as I live. Absolutely.
Now, do you know where he is today?
Today, the last story that I heard of him was he is in Germany, and he is in prison again.
That's the last you know.
That's the last I've known.
You don't need to know anymore, I guess.
I really don't care to know, but in our culture, too, people talk. People love to gossip, and they love to give you news. And anyone who tries to start a conversation about him, I tell them, I'm really not interested. I really don't care. That part of my life is gone. It's buried. It's forever behind me.
Do your children have memories of it? Do they mention it? Do they say, well, Mommy, I remember when he was yelling at you?
No, the newborn was basically 9 weeks old when he pulled the trigger on me. So I was just a new mommy. And I also had a 2-year-old at the time, so no.
No, remember, which is unbelievably good.
Which is a blessing. Which is a blessing. And I tell women when I speak at shelters and I speak at different functions, I tell women, if you can't find the strength within yourself to pull yourself out, please find the strength for your children's sake. Because one of two things is going to happen to those kids if they continue to see this abuse repeatedly. They're either going to marry into it or they're going to become it.
Ugh,
and the cycle
horrifying.
Will always continue, and you need to stop it. We need to stop it. We need to help put an end to domestic violence. We need to. And what I tell women all the time is get out before he takes you out.
I wonder about, and you were working at what, General Motors, was it?
I was.
Well, General Motors. And what, did you ever tell your friends at General Motors about anything that was going on?
No. No. I was working at General Motors at the time, and at the time that I was working at General Motors, I had no issues with him. I had no problems. It did not start until my second pregnancy. Actually, before my second pregnancy.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So I had no connection with friends or whatnot. It was always like I was home then. But even if I did, I said nothing to no one.
Wow. And that's another point we have to make. Say something. Talk to people.
Oh, absolutely. Speak out.
I mean, we all know that feeling when you finally let something out that's been bothering you to other people. You feel this freeing sense, this sense that now somebody else knows about it. It's not so bad anymore.
Oh, that's part of your therapy. Just speaking out and talking about it. That's the first step to your therapy, is not being afraid to say something, not feeling like you are doing something wrong and you're deserving of this. The more we shut our mouths about this, the more these perpetrators and these abusers get stronger and stronger and stronger with what they're doing to these women. And we need to put an end to it. So, yes, if you see someone or know of someone that is being abused, please don't have that mentality, oh, well, it's happening behind closed doors, it's none of my business. It is all our business. We have to call 911 and help to save that person, because you never know, that might be her last chance.
Well, you may be her last chance, and, you know, you just never know. I wonder, what did Paul do for a living? I mean, you never really come out and say, or do you? I can't remember if you came out and said what exactly he did for a living.
He was a tool and die maker at the time.
Oh, tool and die maker. Okay.
He was a tool and die maker at the time.
It may have been anyone.
And made very good money. And
was he having affairs, do you think?
I never knew about them. If he did, I never knew about them. I think his major problem was the drugs.
You never found any lipstick or any weird things on his clothes or anything?
No. No, I never have. Never smelt any women's perfumes. Never. In fact, I never did believe he cheated on me that way, only because he was so possessive of me and how he tried to control me and know my every whereabout. He was more wanting to know where I was going, what I was doing, more on me than not caring and being involved with another woman.
Did he follow you around sometimes? I mean, other than in the house. I mean, would he follow you places?
I don't know. I don't know. I've never seen anything like it. But, I mean, who's to say he hadn't had someone following me or himself? I don't know.
Or his family members.
I couldn't tell you. I don't believe so, but, I mean, anything is possible. Just because you don't see it doesn't mean it's not there.
Are there families where there the father is an abuser and there's nobody else in the family that abuses? I mean, or does it usually run in a pattern? I mean, is it most times that it runs in a pattern in a family, or is it...
You know, I think it does trickle down. I think it is a pattern. I think if your children are there and they see this abuse for years and years and years and the woman never leaves or never gets out or never has the courage to stop it, then the kids, like I told you earlier, they either marry it or they become it.
Right.
That's all they know. That's all they see. And, hey, if my mom got beaten by my dad, then why can't I beat my girlfriend or my wife? Absolutely. She'll take it, too, if my mom took it.
Right.
That's the mentality that these boys grow up with. And the women, same thing with the girls. They see mommy getting beaten, and then their self-esteem is lower, and they don't have the strength and the courage within themselves to say no, and that's where they meet someone that is an abuser, and she allows it because she's seen that in her family where it must be okay because this is what happened in my home.
Did he allow you to have a lot of friends?
I had coworkers. I did not have friends, per se, to like that came to my home and visited.
Were you afraid they would find out if they got too close?
No. The only friends I had were women.
Mm-hmm.
I had no male friends.
But, I mean, what I'm trying to get at is, were you afraid that they would find out what was happening to you and you'd be embarrassed or you couldn't talk about it? I mean, were you afraid of that?
No. Like I said, when this started happening... I was not working at the time, so I really had no connection with friends.
Right.
I had my family.
No friends in the neighborhood?
No friends in the neighborhood.
They never heard any screaming and yelling at your house?
They probably did. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they must have.
But they wanted to stay.
They were never called. But like I said, it was that mentality, it's happening behind closed doors, it's not our business, ignore it.
Which
and
is...
if they would have called maybe times before the actual shooting happened, then... maybe this wouldn't have happened to me. But I do believe, David, that everything in life happens to us for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
There's no coincidences. You know, people say that we have good and bad in our life. I call them lessons and celebrations. And this was something that I needed to go through, he needed to go through, in order to bring us to where we are today.
You believe even the good and the bad there's a reason we're going through the good and the bad.
There's a reason why I went through such a horrific...
unbearable
yeah.
thing. I mean, I have
the woman I am today.
I don't know how you're even alive today. I really don't. And I'm sure you wonder about that sometimes too. But I mean, for the grace of God.
Absolutely, amen. And you know what they say? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
When you got shot, when you actually got shot, did you think you were going to die right then and there?
Well, my first words to him were, and my only words to him were, "You did it, Paul. You shot me for money." And I fell in his arms. So my thought was not, "I'm going to die and I'm going to live." My thought was, "Wow, he actually pulled the trigger for money." And those were my last words until I woke up in the hospital.
So you really didn't know you were going to die. You just were...
I was out. No, I knew nothing. I don't know where I found the strength to say those words to him. But I guess maybe deep down in my soul, I thought those were going to be the last words to him.
Well, how much time elapsed between the time you got shot and you ended up in the hospital? Do you know?
No, I don't know. I really don't know. There is, you know, confirmation on that, I'm sure, and it's all written down on paper of when I arrived in the hospital. But I would say it probably happened within the hour.
Mm-hmm. And was there a lot of blood?
Oh, heavens, lots of blood on the floor, on the bed. He was actually playing with my chest and rubbing that blood all over his hands and his face and his chest. And then as he was walking back and forth, running back and forth, or whatever he was doing from the bedroom to the kitchen where the phone was, there was blood all over the hallway walls. I mean, it looked like a bloodbath in my home.
Do you think he really planned that in advance, or do you think he just lost control?
No, I think he planned it.
He really planned to shoot you?
I really think he planned it. because if you remember reading, it was almost like he was running out of time to get that money.
For whatever he needed it for.
Whatever he needed it for. He was running out of time. Someone was coming after him. It's either my life or that money. And then, of course, having me insured in his workplace of a couple of different life insurance policies didn't help his case much.
What do you suggest to do to women who suspect that something's going on? I mean, suspect that their husbands might be like this. And what are the first couple steps? I mean, or even if they're, you know, the fact that if their husband's having an affair, that's a form of abuse too. But I mean, what do you suggest women do? I mean, what are the first steps?
Well, my situation was really, like I said in the beginning, was very unique because one never believes that your husband's going to pull out a gun and shoot you.
No.
You can't fantom that. Until the moment that he did that to me, I never thought that he would do that. Ever.
Was he more in love with you, or were you more in love with him? Was it pretty equal, do you think, at first?
Well, I had to love him. I believe that he was probably more in love with me in the beginning because he... As a man, you're not forced to go and search and ask for a certain woman that you want to marry. You go and ask for a certain woman you want to marry that you want to marry.
Right.
But in the woman's position, you have no choice. It's the parents that makes the decision. So the man has his own decision right from the get-go of who he wants to ask to marry.
Mm-hmm.
So I do believe that when he saw me, he liked what he saw. It was a young child. I mean... What do you see in a 16-year-old, you know? But he obviously had feelings for me, and he did not know my personality. He did not know my weaknesses or strengths or anything. He didn't know any of that. He just knew that I came from a very good family, very respected family, a very well-known family in all of Europe and in Michigan, at the time when we were living there.
Now, he was how old when you got married?
He was 21.
21. Now, what was his height and weight?
He was about 6 feet tall and about 175 pounds.
Okay, so he's not, for some reason, because he abuses you, you picture this big, big, heavy guy, but he wasn't. He was pretty, pretty slim.
But I was at the time 5'2", 5'3", 110 pounds of that.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a big guy compared to me. He was taller and heavier, and yeah, he was a big guy compared to me, so... Yeah,
it's hard to like. It's hard to feel any sympathy at all for Paul. Especially after reading the book. I mean, you feel practically nothing for him except hatred. I mean, how could you do something like that? How could you possibly do that to your wife? And you were a very, very loving wife.
Well, I truly was. I fell in love with him after I got married because, first of all, I knew that this was going to be my husband, or I thought. For the rest of my life.
And you would have done anything for him?
Anything. David, I would have died for this man. That's how much I loved him. I would have absolutely done anything in the world. I would have died for him. I loved him more than I loved myself.
Mm-hmm.
I was totally committed to this man. I was a virgin when I got married, never been with any men prior or during our marriage with him. I was committed, solely and completely committed to him.
And I can hear women out there saying, well, why didn't she? You mean she didn't feel anything weird that was going on with him? There wasn't anything weird vibes that you got from him? And it's hard to believe that you didn't feel that, but I guess he had it hidden so well.
Well, you know, when you read my book, you see that our drama, if you will, and our abuse went on for 6 months.
Do you think women can read your book and feel that empowerment that you felt?
Absolutely. Absolutely, because when they read about what I went through and how I got through it, they can get through it. No doubt in my mind, they can get through it. I can sympathize and empathize with every woman being abused out there, David, because I've been there, and I've been there the worst possible way. And if I got through this most horrific time, they can get through it.
And that's what you feel when you're reading the book. You feel this sudden sense that I would never let this happen. And now that I know what it's like, I can guard against it. And women can do that. But it's not going to be easy. It's never easy. You have to be really careful.
No.
I mean, sometimes you fall in love with a bad person. It just happens. You don't know they're going to be a bad person. They just turn out to be. But you just fall in love. All you think about is how much you love them.
I don't think anybody turns bad. I think there's always some kind of an evil streak inside them.
Mm-hmm.
I really feel that they hide it well. I don't think anyone can just turn around and turn bad. You either are or you're not.
And sometimes, there are people that suddenly snap. I mean, something said or something's done, and they snap. And that does happen. Anger can come on very suddenly before we know it. And I just hope
but
we don't have a gun in our hand, you know?
In this situation, there was no anger. I was always at his beck and call.
Yeah, he had the anger. He was the one angry with you.
He had the anger, yeah.
Unnecessarily.
And when you read my book, David, as you've read it, you feel that compassion that I have for him at the end in regards to the girls.
Now, how old are your girls today?
My daughters today are 22 and a half and 24 and a half.
And are they protective of their mother?
Oh, they're so, yeah, well, you know, I've taught my girls to be very independent, and they see the strength that I have within me, too.
So you're still protective of them?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm the mama bear, absolutely. my older daughter, she's married to a wonderful man and has two little boys, as happy as can be, and she, you know, she's a nurse, and she's also now getting her teaching degree.
Wonderful.
My younger daughter is an ASU graduate, magna cum laude, and is now going to law school to become an attorney. So I have very educated, very strong women in my home here. So I want, you know, your readers to understand that sometimes you don't need two parents to raise very wonderful children. You don't. Sometimes all you need is just one good one.
Right. Now tell me about this song. Is this a song you wrote?
This is a song I co-wrote, actually, and it's called She Lived to Tell It, and it's in regards to my book. It kind of goes with my book, and I'm trying to pitch this to some country stars who shall remain nameless at this time. And
oh, we can't name them, huh?
Well, I'm sorry, not yet. Not until
okay.
They accept.
I feel like I know something other people don't, but everybody's going to be like...
You do now. You do now. You hush over there. And
I wasn't told that part was a secret. I'm glad you said that.
Oh, my goodness. I'm glad I said that, too. Thank you for letting me talk first. I am pitching it to a different, very famous country stars, and I'm hoping that when they do receive this package of mine, that they will entail, look at this and say, yes, this song needs to come out. And this was another way for me to get women's attention out there, David. It's very hard. I mean, I can do interviews all day long, and I can go to lectures and go to book signings. It's not enough. It's not enough to reach people throughout our country.
Now, are you a singer?
I am not a singer.
Okay, so you haven't sung the song.
I'm just a writer.
So you have the song, but has anybody sung it for you?
Yes, I did have someone that I hired that sang the song. It's in a demo form, and it's already on a CD, and it's already sent out to these different singers, the country stars here, and I'm hoping that I will get some good news very soon, because once this song goes out, this is just another way for me to capture them and to get their attention and to make them feel like when they see the song on TV, on the video, or when they hear it on the radio, it's going to be another motivation for them, another strengthening tool for them. It's as if they have me there taking them by their hand and saying, come on, it's going to be okay. You will survive this. You will overcome this. And you will be better and stronger than ever and walk them out of that abusive relationship before it becomes too late, David.
Now tell people where they can buy your book.
They can buy my book at Barnes & Noble, Amazon. They can get it on my website, livetotellit.com. They can get it through my publishing company, inkwellproductions.com. Many, many places. Many, many availabilities.
Now, have you actually done signings with people?
I've done many signings. My book has been out about 2 years now, and I've gone throughout the country. I've traveled through many, many states and done different book signings at Barnes & Nobles and different shelters.
Have you met a lot of abused women?
That's all I meet. Women that come to my podium, to my table, are women that are going through this, are women that know women that are going through this, and that's all. That's all that comes to me is someone that is being abused or someone that knows that's being abused, a strong connection. And especially when I speak at these shelters, all these women are just confused, and they don't know where to turn to. They don't know who to turn to. See, I was very fortunate, David. I have a very loving, supportive family. Not everybody has that.
Now, what do you have today? Do you have a guy in your life?
Actually, I was married again for the second time, and unfortunately, after 6.5 years, my late husband, he passed away of dementia. I did find love again after oh gosh, many years of everything that's gone on with me. Mm-hmm. Love did come my way again, and he was the most wonderful, loving, patient human being that one can find. And God brought him to me for that reason, to tell me there are good men out there, Hannah. And well, don't label them all as this bad man. There are good men out there.
Well, when you met, I'm curious about when you met the second guy, did you have this immediate fear that he would be like Paul?
No, actually I didn't, David, because what I did is I gave myself time, as much time as I needed to overcome all this and tell myself that there are good people out there and not everybody's like him, and to give someone a chance. So, no, actually, I never thought that, you know, I'm going to be with another man who's going to abuse me, because I was stronger now. I knew what I wanted, and I definitely knew what I didn't want. And I was very careful and cautious, and he was brought to me through a friend. He was introduced to me for a friend, and he courted me, and we dated, and it was all very new stuff to me. It was something that I just thought, this is so loving, and it's just the proper way to do this. It was not performed the same way with my first husband. This time, I gave myself the time that I needed to make certain that this was the right person for me.
How tough was it to be in the courtroom when Paul was there and testifying against him? How tough was that? Was that really tough to do?
I think that was about the hardest thing I had to do up until that point.
I mean, were you still afraid he would send somebody after you?
I always believed that for many years after, because those were his threats to me. That if he can't get to me, he will have somebody else come after me and kill me. So I always had like 10 pairs of eyes around my head, looking in every direction.
They prey on that fear. They just love that you're afraid, and they know you're afraid. And oh, that's so it makes you so angry to think about that.
I don't think he believed that I was able and strong enough to get up on that stand, raise my hand and point the finger right to him and look at him dead in the eyes and say, he is the one who shot me. Because I had to point out in front of the judge, in front of the court, is that person who shot you here in this courtroom today? And I said, yes, he is. He's right there. And I pointed straight at him.
I can't imagine the fear when you woke up that morning and know you had to see him in court. I can't imagine how awful that feeling must have been. Like, now I have to face this man again. And I mean, it's the last thing you want to do is see him again.
That is the last thing you want to do, but it was all on me. Everything fell on me. It was either make it or break it at the point, and I had to tell the judge the truth, tell him everything that happened in order to incarcerate him so he does not get out.
And women have to remember, you have a lot of strength in you that you don't even know about. I mean, everybody has strength in them that they don't know about. I mean, it comes out, you know, it will come out if you just let it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we women are very, very powerful creatures, and we're very strong. We have the strength, David, and the courage to move away from something or someone that is hurting us.
Mm-hmm.
And if he abuses you once, please, ladies, know he will continue to do so.
Now, do you have brothers and sisters?
I have one little brother.
One little brother now. Oh, that's right.
He's not little anymore.
What's that?
He's not little anymore. He's a grown man now, married with his own children and everything. But yes, I have one brother.
I forgot he was in the book. Yeah, now that you say that.
Yes.
Because he felt very powerless in that when this whole thing was going on. That must have been hard for him.
He was only 9.
Yeah.
He was only 9. But today, he's not powerless anymore. And he tells me to this day, if I ever see that man, and thank God he's in Europe. Thank God he was deported. Thank God he is not here to start more trouble and drama with my father.
Well, when you're walking around the area, do you sometimes think you see him? Do you think you see people that look like him?
No.
That never happens?
No, that never really happens to me. I think because I'm so much stronger inside me now, and I always had the strength, David. Remember when I said you're either, you know, who you are is who you are. And yes, people do snap at a certain point, that's true. But, you know, you are who you are. And I guess I always had this inner strength within me. I just could not let it out and could not express myself because of the way I was raised and because how I was told that the man rules and the woman obeys. But that inner strength was always in me.
Did he think he owned you? Did you get that impression that he thought he owned you?
Absolutely.
Like you were property, like you were a house he owned or something?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I belong to him. Absolutely.
But did you feel the same thing that you did belong to him at first? You did.
Absolutely. He had all rights to me. Whatever he wanted, I was there. Absolutely. That's how you're raised. That's how you're brought up.
So when you were shot, that's what really gave you the strength. It sounds to me that's the time when you realized you were strong. You were a strong person. You weren't going to put up with anything after that.
My strength came out from that time. My strength came out, and when you read my book, you see from that moment on, my strength came. And I like I said, I had to be on my toes. I had to be one step, two steps ahead of him.
Now, are you working today?
No, I don't. I am a writer. I travel. I'm an
advocate. Well, that's work.
For abused women. So that's 24/7 work, I suppose. When I say work, I'm thinking 9 to 5. No, I'm always working, I suppose.
What people think? I mean, we live in such a society today where you get what you can, get what you can. But I mean, we get the most out of helping other people. I mean, I don't know if you experience that, but I do. The help that you give other people means more than anything to me. I mean, it's nice to have to be able to live in the style you want to live in, but you know, helping others is really where it's all about, don't you think?
Absolutely, and this is why I am in the process right now of opening up my own nonprofit organization. I'm in the process right now of opening up a shelter for abused and battered women, and I feel like I need to give back. Talking about it and having them read my story and sharing my sacrifices and my trauma with them is not enough.
When will that be open, that shelter, do you think?
Well, it's a lengthy process. It's going to take a little while because I just started. I just registered my name and I just filed the paperwork, and now I have to fill out all the lengthy paperwork that goes to the IRS, and that's the lengthy part. Right. After that, then I start the building and I start the process of bringing the women to my shelter and giving them the strength from that moment on that they take their first step to walk out of their relationship and find help for themselves and their children. That is when I'm going to take over and make sure that they never go back again and they never get involved with another abused man again and they live a happy, healthy, non-controlling life.
That's wonderful. I wish you all the best with that.
I thank you.
And, you know, it's just been, it's very inspirational to hear your story. And it gives everybody out there hope. I mean, there's hope for everyone out there, man and woman. And there are men being abused, too. That's not limited to women. Men get abused,
not.
Too.
It's not. Unfortunately, there's 98% of women that are abused.
Right.
And about 97% of the perpetrators are male. So, but no, I sympathize with all the men as well that are being abused. Abuse is abuse, bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no excuse for it.
Well, it's been great to talk to you, Hannah. And the book, again, is called Live to Tell It from Inkwell Productions. And like she said, you can get it on her website and on the Inkwell Productions website and Barnes & Noble. And did you say Amazon has it, too?
Amazon has it, too, the iBooks and everything. It's available everywhere.
Is it an e-book also?
It is.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much. It's been
You're
wonderful.
More than welcome. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
And this has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.